You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this January 19th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. I appreciate you being here. We appreciate you being here on this sunny but chilly Monday afternoon in the Auburn Opelika area. Hopefully most of you are enjoying a day off of work today. I know the kiddos are out of school today. I know a ton of people are off of work today. Our office is actually closed today, but you know how radio works. It never sleeps. We never sleep, and if our GM is listening, we never get a day off. No, I'm just kidding. They take good care of us here. But happy Monday. We appreciate you being with us on this MLK Day, as there is a ton to go over the next couple of hours. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We've got college basketball to recap. We have transfer portal news again. Good and bad additions for Auburn football. Changes to the calendar for basketball. So we'll dive into a lot of that. Plus, the NFL playoffs were just drunk this weekend. And I think there's a game going on tonight. Oh, that's right. It's the national championship game. So, Christian, happy Monday, sir. How are you?
Happy Monday. Yeah, doing well. Excited to be able to dive into, again, a really, really fun weekend of the sports world. Hopefully had everybody's multiple TVs, their quad boxes going, because there were a really good, heck of a lot of good basketball games. You mentioned the NFL playoff games going on as well. And that's about to, a lot of what we get to dive into here today. Talking Auburn basketball, their win over South Carolina went about as both of us predicted, maybe not necessarily from the scoreboard-wise, but just when it came to the confidence or the momentum and just the overall feeling when you left Neville Arena on Saturday. But we have some pushbacks and some pushbacks to the pushbacks. And so Should be a really fun conversation on that side of things. We'll also dive into basketball around the SEC, around the top 25. As there is a new AP Top 25, what does that look like in regards to Auburn's future schedule? We'll also dive into, as you mentioned, Jacob, the Auburn football transfer portal. Again, as the official portal is closed. So Auburn fans, if you've seen names commit or you've seen names sign, I guess I should say, or you saw them last year and they don't have any news around their name, You do not have to worry about subtractions. There are a couple additions that we need to get to, both on the transfer portal side of things and on the taking their name out of the transfer portal side of things. So we'll dive into all of that. And you mentioned the NFL, a crazy weekend, and how next week could be even crazier, and how that looks on the Auburn football side of things as quarterbacks that wear the same colors, but a name that you haven't heard of in a couple of years, is going to be taking snaps in Denver. We'll be talking about that all in hour number one before we dive into a really fun national championship conversation and Jacob Hillman joining us in hour number two.
Yeah, it's a loaded show today, so while you're out driving around doing your honeydews, knocking out any chores or any anything you're up to on this off day, or for those of you working as well and you want to be a part of the show, we would love to hear from you on this gorgeous Monday. 334-321-1390. That is the number to get you through to us on the phone lines by calling in. Again, 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. How you feeling on this Monday? Maybe a national championship prediction between Indiana and Miami. We'll talk about that game coming up later this show, and we'll have that radio broadcast for you here on ESPN 106.7, so be sure you tune in for that. Or anything else on your mind, again, you can give us a call or you could shoot us a text in our On the Line text box. And I assume we need to start with what happened this weekend in college basketball, because there's a lot going on. And yet again, I feel like, and I'm more convinced on why this is now, but it feels like college basketball this season doesn't have the hype and the buzz around it, especially in Auburn and especially in the SEC. And it's a pretty clear reason that we debated last week, Christian, but I think it's just a fact now. It's just not as good. The teams aren't as good this year, and they're not bad by any means. You still have 6, 7, 8, 9 different tournament teams, I think, but you don't have a record-breaking number. You don't have 2 Final Four contenders right now, and Auburn basketball struggled with South Carolina on Saturday. That is why it seems like college basketball, at least around here, is sort of on the back burner.
Even in, I mean, Tuscaloosa, yes, Alabama 3-2, but frustrating losses on that side of things. So just in the state of Alabama, you feel like there's a little bit more frustration around college basketball, and you dive into the main reason from last year to this year, and man, go look at the rosters from last year, right? I mean, you had kids that were on that roster for 3 or 4 years. You look at Janai Broome, you look at Dylan Cardwell, you look over on the other side with Mark Sears, right? I mean, guys that were in college and were able to use that COVID year to their advantage and really, really be that veteran leadership. You now have a little bit of that, but both of these teams are a little bit younger, a little bit newer. There's more names. There's new names that you're having to learn, at least standing or speaking from the Auburn and Alabama standpoint of, yeah, you feel like it's easier to be a little bit more disconnected, right? Because it's a couple names that I haven't watched for 3 years, or yeah, it's names that I haven't seen walking around downtown Auburn, and I haven't grown up seeing a bunch of these names. And by no means is that a bad thing as a fan, but it makes it a little bit easier to be a little bit less invested. Take the national championship tonight as a perfect example. Are you going to watch it? Yes. Are you going to turn it off after 60 minutes and not really care? Probably, because yeah, you don't have emotional ties to either of these teams or any of these players, unless it's for money reasons. But yeah, there's just so many names that you haven't heard or that you don't know, and they don't wear your colors. It makes it a little bit easier to tune out, and I think that is another reason why basketball, as well as the talent, what you're seeing on the floor, makes it a little bit easier to either A, check out, or B, be a little bit less invested, which I think you've seen.
I think the transfer portal has a big part of that, a huge impact on that, because now it's one big portal window during January, not at the end of December, big break, and then in the spring, yeah, too. I haven't even thought about that. I think that has a huge impact because you have a ton of fans in the SEC in particular who are just basically scrolling and constantly refreshing their phone, waiting on the next transfer portal guy to commit somewhere. Yes, yeah, for football. And that takes away a lot of the attention that fans at this time of year were now flipping to basketball, right? Because even the, and again, this comes off with a negative connotation, and I don't think it should, the casual college basketball fans,
yeah,
a lot of them don't tune in night in and night out in November and December during conference or non-conference games. Some will have it on during feast week, and some will have it on, you know, around the holidays if they're, you know, got nothing else to do. But a lot of college basketball fans start to tune back in when conference play hits, and that's end of December and January. But because of all the other things going on, it just seems like it hasn't been at the forefront. But for Auburn in particular, I think it has had a little bit of a, I don't know the best way to say this, a dark cloud over it, just because they have not been as good as what fans were hoping for. And I want to say this too. I don't think anybody was expecting Auburn basketball to repeat the success that they had a year ago. But I do think Auburn fans had an expectation for them to be further along than what they are.
Very much so. And that was a part of the conversation we had either Thursday or Friday last week, and I know we're going to dive into a little bit more here today on first-year coaching expectations and the first-year Stephen Pearl inability to really recruit. He had to simply retain all of the talent. You even heard Keyshawn Hall talk about it after the Arkansas win when we were in the press conference of, man, throughout the entire portal process, I was talking with Bruce and talking talking with BP, talking about, man, how he was going to challenge me to be a better defender. He knows this Auburn team is going to be able to do that. And nothing against Steven on that side of things, but just goes to show you what Bruce was to a lot of these guys and what the what Bruce was for the overall team and the coaching standpoint. You have to think of this a little bit more on the Steven Pearl side of things, where as frustrated as you may be, and we're going to talk about this as well, but a four-point win in Neville Arena to what is probably your easiest opponent at home, if not your easiest opponent in conference play, the South Carolina Gamecocks. You push back on that, and year one, any win in the SEC is one that you will happily take.
Yeah.
That being said, with all of the hype that happens, or that basically followed this team, despite it being completely new other than Tahad Pettiford, it adds a little bit of frustration to the, you mentioned, the casual fan that didn't tune in to the non-conference games or didn't see too much of this team. You just saw, okay, you saw the names we brought in, but haven't watched them play 5-on-5.
Yeah, so we dive into what happened Saturday afternoon inside of Auburn, or inside of Neville Arena, actually. Haven't called it Auburn Arena in a while. Inside of Neville Arena, as Auburn and South Carolina did battle. Tigers win, right, at least start right there. Like you said, a win's a win.
Exactly.
In the SEC, you get a victory, and that should be celebrated.
You were one of two SEC home teams to get a win on Saturday.
Shows how difficult it is to win on the road, which Auburn's about to, well, I guess.
Weirdly enough, that is a reverse part of the conversation.
Yeah,
because
you're right.
It's always been, yeah, it's so hard to win on the road. You feel like at home there's such an advantage, but on Saturday it was almost the reverse factor. Only two home teams.
I guess it shows how hard it is to win in the SEC.
Win in general.
No matter where you are.
Which is a sub point of what you were getting to of, first off, let's pause. Auburn won on Saturday.
Yeah. Was it pretty? No. Was it a 40-minute game? You bet. And Auburn had to do everything in its power to win that game. And there are several avenues, if you will, that I want to take with this. And I know you do too. Avenue A is, or Avenue 1, right, is the idea that it is very frustrating to watch Auburn, as talented as they are, struggle with that South Carolina team. That South Carolina team is now 10-8 on the season and 1-4 in SEC play. Their only win in conference was over LSU, who was previously winless until this past weekend.
And jumped in the KenPom rankings after playing you.
It's frustrating to watch Auburn struggle with that South Carolina team.
South Carolina went from 92nd defensively overall to 78th.
Golly.
After playing a road game in Neville Arena.
Because they held you to 71 points on the evening, 30 in the first half, where your leading scorer was Philip Jovic. That's not really what you're looking for. Tigers as a team in this game shot just 41%, which is pretty darn good given some of the other numbers. How about your three-point percentage? 11. You were 2 of 19 from downtown.
I do love the number of threes. I love only shooting 19 rather than 32, 33.
I'd rather that be cut in half knowing you're not making them. The fact
sure.
that you went 2 of 19 after about the 15th one, I would have said, okay, we're done. We're done.
Which I think was enough. A little bit of the factor, because I know you're going to dive into it, but the fact that Phillip had his welcome to college basketball moment on the good side of things, because South Carolina did not double the post, you mentioned it where Steven talked about it post-game of, it's the first time ever we've seen a team not double the post. So during a timeout, I said, Phillip, stop passing the ball, go score.
He said, okay, coach. And he did. And Jovic had an incredible game, his best one of his young college career. Auburn got to the free throw line 30 times. You knocked down 23 of those. You get out-rebounded in this game, which is frustrating, right? So there's that side of it. The fact that Auburn shot so poorly, played so poorly, Tahad and Keyshawn Hall, again, did not have the games that you need out of them to be competitive and or successful in the SEC, those things are frustrating. But to Stephen Pearl's point in the post-game press conference that I was a part of, he said, just from the three-point stripe alone, if we shoot our season average, not get hot, not go crazy like they did against Arkansas, just shoot their season average, they win by 15 or more. So there are two ways to look at this. and both can be true. Auburn did not play well at all on Saturday and had to fight to get out of their own building against South Carolina. But I also think it's safe to say that is one of the worst games they've played this year, if not the worst statistically, and it probably won't happen again.
Offensively,
yes.
At least. Yeah, I mean, you go and you look at these numbers, you probably, if you don't look at the scoreboard, probably say that South Carolina possibly upsets Auburn. Then you go look at it, the fact that with all of that, your offense didn't affect your defense, which has been a major talking point for Stephen Pearl and this team, of not letting your cold streaks turn into, okay, well, now it's a 12-0 run by the other team. You only gave up 67 points against South Carolina, which, again, all things said and done, is a easy, good enough number to pull out a win. But you go and you look at just some of the numbers, if you're diving into the three-point line or just the overall field goal. I mean, Tahad, 2 of 8, KO, 3 of 8. Keyshawn Hall, again, struggles for the second time in a row and arguably only the second time this season, only has 8 points. But, again, somebody stepped up when you needed them to step up, and that's Filip Jovic. 23 points, 9 of 12, 5 of 8 from the free throw line, 6 rebounds, 2 steals between him and Sebastian Williams-Adams, which everybody has seen the post-game clips of him calling him his brother and saying that Sebastian is loving learning a little bit of the language and letting Filip talk his Serbian S-H-I, you know what. And I just think
that's so awesome.
So funny. But him putting his arm around him, telling him that he loves him, telling him that he loves the growth that you've seen. And yeah. You want to talk about a player who took a lot of heat really early on in this season. It was Filip, because of not being ready, the game being too fast. We talked about the talent that we saw, but it just looked like there was no ability to play without hesitation because of, do I make this pass? Is it the right pass? You're now seeing a little bit more of the aggression. You're seeing the confidence easily. And all of that is working its way into fruition, into success on the offensive side of the floor, defensively in there as well. I mean, 23 points in 30 minutes. And then you add Sway in there, 11 points, 8 rebounds, an assist in there as well, 3 steals, a block. I mean, those are two freshmen that you can really build around in the future if you're Stephen Pearl.
No doubt. And then you start getting your typical performances from Keyshawn Hall and whatever we think a typical performance from Tahad Pettiford is in 2026. Sure. I don't think we know what that looks like.
I even mean, yes, in this season, but 2027 with those two guys, Sebastian and Filip. I mean,
yeah. Well, Jack and I were talking at the arena Saturday during halftime or a timeout or whatever, and that's kind of what we were talking about, was the idea that, man, think about if Sway hangs around and Filip hangs around. And
Give them the opportunity to hang around. Keep them here.
Yeah. I mean, retain them. Simon Walker, right, who obviously has struggled to get on the floor this season. The Magwood situation is its own problem, unfortunately. But you have some young guys that you can build on, like you mentioned. But I'm talking this season,
sure,
where you can try and, I'll say it, turn this thing around.
Yeah.
Because it's not where it needs to be. Sorry, a 4-point win over South Carolina does not really do it for me, but you got the win. And that does need to be celebrated. And so, do you have something else to add?
I was just going to ask a question that you feel like shouldn't be asked, but again, is just where you're at right now on Monday, January 19th. Did a 4-point win over South Carolina save the season for Auburn?
We'll talk about it when we come back, just underway here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. A couple of text messages to get to as well. All that here as we're just underway on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us as we talk more Auburn basketball as they take down South Carolina this weekend, 71-67. We'll dive into some of the other scores and things going on around the conference and around the country as well. But Christian, a couple of messages in our on the line text box at 334-784-1067. You can send your thoughts, questions, and concerns there. Someone says, the word I would use for Jovic right now is fluid with his performance on Saturday against South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, again, he's not having to think. He's not having to second guess anything that he is doing, whether that's rebounding, whether that is playmaking, or whether that is just simply getting the ball in the low block or even getting the ball and going coast to coast. Yeah, fluid is a very good word to describe his game, at least in this game, but something that you're seeing more and more of as the season goes on and as his minutes continue to go up.
Someone also pointed out the poor three-point shooting for Auburn in greater detail, says that Auburn's first shot of the game was a made three by Tahad Pettiford.
And the team
then missed 17 in a row until Kevin Overton hit the last three-pointer that Auburn took. A three, by the way, that Auburn desperately needed given how they played the rest of the way, the last handful of seconds, because South Carolina got fouled, hit some shots, they kept it close. And I was talking with some of the other folks in the media section, and it was like, holy crap, if Kevin Overton doesn't hit that three, this is a tie ball game.
Yeah.
Like, how bad is that? That Auburn basically needed a desperation three from Kevin Overton.
From Opelika.
To win the ballgame.
Yeah.
That's scary.
It's very scary. It's also scary, too, not just even the Auburn perspective or the Auburn standpoint, but just in college basketball in general, and I think a lot of these conversations spark from the European game and just how the fundamentals, and they do everything right over there, it seems like, but man, how many teams do you think practice full court offense in trapping and pressure situations? Because Auburn has fallen victim to being really unsuccessful with full court pressure. But in the games when Auburn brings full court pressure, man, it feels like every single time they do it, they force a turnover. And so, man, it just brings back the conversation. You watch it in just regular college basketball or the games that you turn on at 2:30 on Saturdays. Teams don't pressure a lot, but when they do, man, they create so many turnovers. And it is frustrating to think about on that side of things, because it feels like that is one of the terms or the strategies offensively that kind of go by the wayside rather than the tween, step back three that the game is evolving to.
I'll say this. I feel like, and I know that it's so hard to simulate that in practice, right? Especially, and this is no shot at anybody, but it's hard to do that with your reserves going against your starters and vice versa. Like, it's hard to simulate what that pressure actually looks like and feels like compared to game on the line, can't turn it over. God, if we lose the, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just think that's super hard, but you still have to try. And I'm not saying Auburn isn't. I'm saying Auburn clearly needs some help in that category.
And us calling high school basketball, we see it more than anything of the teams that have prepared it versus the teams that haven't. Because, man, how many times is it that ball finds the bottom of the net, Auburn High, or at least Scott Academy has to inbound the basketball. Other teams setting up a full court trap, it takes two passes, and all of a sudden the trap is broken, and our team has the ball on the other side of the court.
And the amount of turnovers at half court where it's just, you know what I mean, where you're just pressuring high school basketball. Yeah, they pressure on a make, on a miss, on a turnover, on a timeout. They don't care.
Right.
They really don't care.
And again, for a team like Lee Scott, that's where they thrive. They love the live ball turnovers, getting out in transition. But man, even when you're watching college basketball and you see these really fluid teams, going back to that word of, man, you know exactly what the defense is about to run, whether that's a 55 full court man trap, it's a 2-1-2 you're trying to trap in the coffin corner, or a 1-2-2 three quarter press that a lot of these coaches are running, where you're trying to draw the trap right in front of half court, or as soon as you get across half court, you send the blitz. And that's what you saw Tahad Pettiford fall victim to a couple of times, especially in the A&M game. But I mean, how many times have you seen good basketball where it's just easy and all of a sudden those teams can't pressure in the full court anymore because it just leads to wide open buckets? You feel like there's just a little bit of a disconnect, or maybe it's just a little bit of a lack of focus when you think about those little things because that's just something that you've done for so long you feel like you should know how to do, and that's not an Auburn thing. That's just a college basketball thing.
But I even go back to not even that in particular, but just Auburn's half-court offense in general of still watching guys watch the basketball, yeah, stand flat-footed, and one guy go ISO. Like I don't understand how that continues to happen at this point in the season, because you can't have that. And unfortunately, there are players on this Auburn basketball team that if you allow them to play ISO ball, they'll take it. They'll run with it. And sometimes they get a good shot, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they hit a miracle shot, and a lot of times they don't. But you saw on Saturday against South Carolina, right, when Auburn runs legitimate offense and the ball touches multiple hands on a possession.
And both sides of the floor.
That's exactly what I was going to say. God forbid it touches both sides of the floor.
Or it's a paint touch and then a kick out.
Auburn normally scores or at least gets a good looking shot.
Yeah.
Which I would love to dive into some of the numbers deeper about the quality of shots that Auburn is taking on an average offensive possession. It's got to be horrific. And so those things have to change. Defensively looked better this weekend. Still wasn't great. But I'll say this. The South Carolina team, they're not good.
We talk about the offensive and the success. You go back to the Arkansas game. That's the one game in conference play that you've looked really good offensively. You had 21 or 22 assists. I don't believe you've gotten over 12 in any other SEC game. There's a reason of what we talk about working.
Yeah, no doubt. So Auburn wins. They beat South Carolina. More college basketball talk as we go. But we'll take a break, come back, and continue talking the transfer portal, because Auburn and new head coach Alex Golish have made even more additions since the last time we talked to you.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. Phone lines are open for about another hour or so as we will talk to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network coming up at 3:30, so 60 minutes from now. So until then, you are encouraged to call in, give us your thoughts on Auburn basketball, Auburn football in the transfer portal, which is where we go now, or anything else, national championship game, NFL playoffs, whatever's on your mind. Today, we'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. We'll also have the text box open all show long at 334-784-1067. And the transfer portal is officially closed. And what that means is no player in college football can now enter their name into the portal anymore. That's what that means.
With an asterisk of tonight.
Yes, yes. Other than Indiana and Miami.
And shout out if you're a fan of the Hoosiers and Hurricanes and you're tuned in today.
Yeah, shout out. Every other player in college football, unless you're already in the portal, you're stuck. You're done. But there's a good chance that you're where you want to be because, you had 2 weeks to get in. So if you didn't do it, sorry. I don't know what to tell you. But that's good because that at least cuts down on the chaos a little bit, because now you know who's on your team is not leaving. You can still make additions, right? And the thousands of players that are still in the transfer portal right now can still commit somewhere. You just won't see any more entries from any school, including Auburn. And I think that's big news. And I think Auburn has done a phenomenal job, Christian, in the transfer portal late. And they have made more additions since Thursday, Friday, when we were talking about it last.
Auburn now with 33 incoming transfers confirmed so far. And I don't believe, this is updated. But when you lose 37, and you're able to get 33, you feel like those are shows that we made the jokes about starting the show of Radio Never Sleeping. I don't think Alex Golish has slept much more than we have.
He was at the basketball game Saturday. They actually, was that in the midweek, or was that Saturday?
It was Saturday where his son was the celebrity
letter
holder.
That was cool,
holder.
And then he came out, and it was with him, and they did their cool, like, handshake. It was sweet. It was cool to see that, yeah. He wasn't there for very long because there was a bus of about 40 recruits getting out and
junior
going
day,
into,
wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that, getting on or getting off the bus and going into Jordan-Hare before the basketball game started.
Isn't it unfortunate and a little bit frustrating that 2 or 3 years ago, that would have been what we started the show with? It was junior day. Look at the amount of big time names that Auburn hosted, or it's their version of Big Cat, right? But now, again, even more so in the junior and sophomore class, commits are okay, sweet, awesome. Okay.
Yeah, but you still have to do the work. That's what sucks.
And that's you now have to do the work, but the fans don't feel the excitement of all of the work that you put in until after pen goes to paper, and even after that.
And I would say that a lot of these coaches are seeing some sort of a trend. I mean, they're probably getting half of the high school commits that they used to that they're putting in all this early work for.
Sure.
I mean, think about that, too. That number has got to be pretty remarkable, I would think. But
and then just the concern of, I commit, but I'm still going to this place, and this place, all in my junior year.
Yeah, that's just stupid.
But really stupid. 33 incoming transfers for the Auburn Tigers, and the last one I believe that we mentioned was Scrap Richardson on Friday the 16th, and since then, for the offensive linemen out there listening,
yep.
You've put in some work.
You've got some more, for sure.
As on the 17th, the Stanford offensive lineman, Jack Layer, he visited Auburn, and the very next morning, signed with the Auburn Tigers. You also have the Ole Miss edge, Deshaun Womack. He signed with Auburn.
Big.
Very, very nice one. Jacoby Matthews, the Auburn safety, he withdrew his name from the transfer portal, which is really nice to hear. And then yesterday afternoon, Arizona safety Jack Luttrell committed to Auburn, and I believe somewhat local kid, huh? Yes, very much so.
Then there was another one today.
I believe he signed earlier this morning as well. And then Auburn signing the Chattanooga cornerback Kamari Todd as well, a really talented kid. But the Luttrell family, I spent some time with in high school. They were Buford natives before pursuing other directions at the high school level, but I've kept up with Jack and his brother for a while, from a little bit more from a distance, but cool to see another name that makes me feel even older, that I'm now watching a buddy of mine's little brother play his senior year for Auburn.
Yeah, that hurts. That will make you feel old, for sure. But look, here's the thing, and we've continued to say this because I like these additions that Auburn has made in the past several days, especially getting offensive linemen, and you go and get another defensive guy, and the Ole Miss kid is just, I mean, that guy's huge, right? You can't, I guess you can, I recommend that you don't, be picky right now. Auburn has bodies, man. Auburn actually has enough guys to field a football team, which is not a guarantee, right? Just because all these guys leave and there's thousands of names in the transfer portal, that doesn't mean they're all just going to sign their name to go to Auburn, right? You got to go and put in the work. You got to go in and find these kids. You got to go and compete with the hundreds of other schools across the nation who need offensive linemen, who need corners, who need safeties, who need receivers, who need a quarterback. And you have to go and compete with that. I always go back to the conversation I had a couple of years ago with Auburn volleyball's head coach right now, current head coach Brent Crouch, and talked to him a couple of years ago about the transfer portal in particular. And this was for college volleyball. And he said at that time, this was a couple of years ago now, that when a player enters the transfer portal for college volleyball, if you don't reach out within the first hour or two, you won't get them. Because everybody's already in their inbox. Everybody's in their DMs. Everybody's in their, you know, not that volleyball players have big agents and things like college football, but you get it. He said, if you're not in and reaching out to them within the first hour or two, you may as well give up because you're buried so deep they won't have time to get to you.
Have you seen the video of I think there's one for high school, but I saw one more recently too about one of the top lacrosse players in college lacrosse, and it was the second that like the transfer portal opened, and he'd already announced like his intention, and his phone sitting on the dining room table at his house.
Wow,
it was just like the very second.
No, I have.
That
I bet that's
midnight.
Fascinating.
It's insane, and the amount of not just text, but he was getting phone calls, and I mean, it was almost overwhelming to think about. And wow. I've seen videos of offensive linemen that are just out to dinner and have to step out for 2 hours because there's four or five straight phone calls that they're sitting there having to work. And so, yeah, I can only imagine the time frame of the minor sports rather than in football. You feel like they take their time a little bit more because they want to be able to weigh their options and weigh the dollar signs. But
right,
still, the
that
the
gives
chaos.
You a little bit of perspective, I guess, on what Auburn has done. But looking at, again, some of the guys that Auburn has brought through, the latest was today, again, the corner, Kamari Todd from Chattanooga, a guy that is from the state of Alabama. So you bring home another guy from the state who left and is now coming back. 6'1", 170 pounds, is Kamari Todd. He played as a true freshman at Chattanooga. Listen to this. Had a pick, had a tackle for loss, and 50 total tackles. So a guy that may not be the most aggressive playing up or going after the football, but a guy that is good in the open field, a guy that makes a play.
50 tackles for a cornerback is...
That's a lot. I mean, that's
shows that
a
he
lot.
Might be more of a downhill cornerback than a major coverage back, but regardless, I mean, that's
you
mentioned it, be able to tackle an open space.
And that is now the fifth transfer corner that Auburn has brought in. Gavin Jenkins from South Florida, Shamar Arnaud from Florida State, who I'm a big fan of, Scrap Richardson, who we talked about on Friday from Notre Dame, Andre Jordan from UCLA, I think people are forgetting about that name, and now Kamari Todd from Chattanooga. So even with just the five dudes you're bringing in, I like the names, I like their stats, I like their film. Will they all work out? Probably not, but I like at least what Auburn has done, and that's the latest addition today as Kamari Todd.
Yeah, you mentioned the names that are returning, adding on to the names that are retaining.
Yeah.
And you feel like, again, the defense is going to be the strength of this team, at least on the side of paper of big-time athletes and big-time names. But you've seen with Golish of the teams of the past – and how funny, we were sitting there having the conversation yesterday about Tennessee, right? And how if Tennessee doesn't get that big name quarterback, how good are they going to be? And we sat there and was kind of like, okay, well, last year, nobody really knew a lot of the offense. Nobody really knew the name Joey Aguilar other than the App State side of things and then UCLA and everything on that side.
The aftermath of the Nico drama.
Right,
too.
But it wasn't. Yeah. We didn't know his name because of talent, because of stats on the football field.
Right.
And then we were sitting there going, well, yeah, you feel like Tennessee is going to be fine just because of Heupel. I mean, you go back to Joe Milton and all of those names and how they were able to still put together a really good offense. And we kind of joked and said, well, half of that was from Alex Golish. And so, obviously, yes, with Byron Brown on offense is a very big name. But you go back to that Tennessee type of offense when he was there, it wasn't necessarily just, and I say this with quotations, just star-studded talent everywhere, yet you found a way to be overproductive on the offensive side of the football, which gives you even more confidence about what he did last year at South Florida, bringing over a bunch of those skill guys, now bringing over some offensive linemen, and going and getting some big-time offensive linemen as well. It builds more and more confidence on the offensive side of the football. Auburn, 33 commits, four stars, you have 27 3-stars and a couple from the JUCO level or from redshirting that don't necessarily enter with any sort of star rankings, but we've told you our thoughts on 3-star versus 4-stars and things like that, especially in the transfer portal. Auburn, as of now, and you would imagine it won't jump anything crazy, but right now sits at 12th overall in the transfer portal rankings.
I want to also highlight the offensive lineman that Auburn received this weekend from Stanford, one that's been in the works for a little bit and finally came to fruition, not just committed, but signed. I believe everybody we've talked about has signed with Auburn as far as I'm concerned.
I believe the only one might be the Chattanooga guy, since that was this morning. But you would, if it has,
he
might have.
I think he's signed. Our buddy Christian Clemente at Auburn 247 says that he has signed
with
Auburn.
Okay, well then, yeah. Then it should be 33 for 33,
if
that's the case.
I think so.
Which you say might not sound like a whole lot, but we saw 30 minutes ago.
There was a transfer portal commitment flip.
After the transfer portal was closed, you had a guy committed to one school flip to another.
That's stupid.
Which you want to talk about just something being broken.
And then we haven't even really mentioned the Darian Mensah stuff, really. I mean, I think we mentioned the forefront of it, but I don't think we mentioned all of the actual news and details of that whole situation, which was kind of the Damon Williams situation that just went through. Right, Damon Williams tried to leave Washington. They said, no, no, no. And he was like, just kidding. I never wanted to leave Seattle anyway. Darian Mensah at Duke said, I'm going to stay. And then somebody said, but we'll pay you more. He said, cool, I'll leave. And Duke said, okay, but we hold your NIL rights. And he said, all right, that's fine. Crazy. We'll get into that maybe one day later this week.
Yes, but going back to that, Luttrell as well as Kamari Todd, they both have signs this morning.
And then a guy that I do want to highlight who has signed with Auburn is the offensive line transfer from Stanford, Jack Layer, who I hope I'm pronouncing that properly. Leyrer Layer. It's kind of hard to say, but a guy who played several years at Stanford. He has one year of eligibility. He did not play in 2025. He had a medical red shirt. This dude is huge. 6'7", 285 pounds. I know he's not the 300-plus that you typically think of the offensive line, but he's 6'7", 285, and can really move some people around. He redshirted in 21, had a few games in 22, couple of games in 23, played most of 2024, and played on the left side of the offensive line. Good news is he has starts at left guard and at left tackle. So you can bring this guy in who has played P4 football in the ACC for Stanford, and you can play him on the left side of the line at either guard or tackle. He moves very well. He, I think, can play those several positions, and he's just somebody that can kind of get in the way. So now you look at it. Cole Best, who I believe to be probably your starting center for Auburn in 26. You bring in Cole Skinner from South Florida. Sorry, you also bring in Joe Simmons from James Madison, TJ Hedrick from Ole Miss, Jacob Strand from Oregon State, Stanton Rommel from Michigan State, and now this guy from Stanford. I mean, you've brought in some serious talent on the offensive line, and I want to remind people, it is a new offensive line coach. Tyler Hudanick is now your offensive line coach. It is not the former. So,
I just made the connection, too, of Jacob Strand from Oregon State with Tristan Tia, former quarterback at Oregon State. So that's a cool little connection.
Yeah, and we expect Tia to be the backup, or at least battling for the backup spot, right?
Yeah.
We expect him and you got one or two freshmen coming into the quarterback spot, too. So Auburn is starting to load up quickly in the transfer portal, especially up front on that offensive line. And so more on that as the week goes on. Auburn could pick up another commit or two. Portal is closed for people to enter, but you can still land commitments. So we'll see what happens for Alex Golich and the Tigers. But we need to get to our last break here in hour number one. We'll come back and wrap it up after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes left before we get into the 3 o'clock hour where we will be talking the national championship game coming up tonight between Indiana and Miami. We'll have that radio broadcast for you here on ESPN 106.7, so be sure you tune in for that. And my goodness, in the next 2 or 3 minutes, we'll try our best. NFL playoffs this weekend were incredible. 2 games Saturday, 2 games Sunday. You had dramatics, you had weather, you had turnovers, you had drama. I mean, you had officiating problems. I mean, sounds like football to me.
Other than maybe Seahawks 49ers, where...
Yeah.
Thankfully, that was the game that started at like 8:30 or something.
Yeah, that was a tough look.
Both backup quarterbacks played the final 6.5 minutes of the fourth quarter. But other than that, yeah, what more could you have asked for if you were just a fan of NFL and playoff football? The Broncos get a big-time win at home. They needed that win just to kind of prove, because there were so many people talking about if they didn't win, they would go down as the worst number one seed
and they almost ever. They almost blew it.
They almost blew it, but Bo Nix, fractured ankle and all. Yeah. Which we found, again, after getting confirmation from Sean Payton, that was the second to last play of the game, and then basically made it worse on that last kneel down to center the football for
because he took a shot. I mean, he took a shot right there.
From behind, yeah, and you could see him get up, but which makes a little bit more sense because that interview was a little bit weird for Bo. He seemed very out of it, and maybe that was the reason, but we say that primarily just from the Auburn standpoint, because a name that you may not have heard in quite some time, but Jarrett Stidham is the backup in Denver, and Sean Payton has said that Jarrett Stidham will start in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, that's crazy. A guy that's about to make his fifth ever career start in the NFL has not thrown an official pass in a game since 2023.
Man, but before this season, Stidham talked about he feels that he is ready and he has the talent to be a starting quarterback in this league. This is a big opportunity for him to not only go out and perform really well, but maybe to go get picked up by one of these teams. And,
yeah.
I mean, you talk about the NFL system. I mean, that was something that we saw in college of was still another one of those questions of why was Auburn the final choice? But
yeah, you ain't lying.
I mean, has the mobility, definitely has the arm talent that he showed all throughout preseason, and then people are using that 1-3 record. People have to remember that was when he was playing for a terrible Raiders team.
And with the Patriots.
And with
when
a terrible Patriots team. And so the fact that he now has a really good defense behind him, man, take care of the football. Use your running backs. R.J. Harvey, you would imagine, is going to get a big workload. But, yeah, a really cool moment for Jarrett Stidham. I know that picture of Bo on a recruiting visit, taking the picture with Stidham inside one of the football facilities is pretty cool. But that was Saturday. And then Sunday you had the Patriots-Texans turnover game where I believe there were 8 turnovers in that contest, if not more, even later on.
Yeah, 8 or 9. I mean, it was terrible.
That game was terrible. And then the Rams-Bears delivered one of the greatest games of
the Bears! The Bears! Oh, that made me so happy. You know how miserable I would be to have to sit here all freaking week and listen about the Chicago Bears being in the NFC Championship game? And then how miserable I would be on Sunday afternoon having to watch the Bears play in the NFC Championship game. Good news is they blew it like they always do. Sucks to be you, the Bears.
They didn't blow it a couple weeks ago, though, did they? I don't remember that. I don't remember much of that game.
No, a hell of a throw by Caleb Williams, though, to the back corner of the end zone.
Yeah,
but
that
was crazy. Also saw a stat about the Denver Broncos. Did you know that they are the only team in the National Football League this season with a backup quarterback to not record a single pass? Bo Nix threw every single pass this season for the Denver Broncos, the only team in the league to do that. And that guy is about to start the AFC Championship game. I'm sure it'll go fine. I'm sure nothing will go wrong.
Go make you some money, Stiddy.
Hopefully so. We'll talk more about it as the week goes on. Stick around, though. Hour number 2 coming up. We talk the national championship game between Indiana and Miami.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this MLK Day. And whether you're working, whether you're off, whether you are, chauffeuring the kids around or something because they're not in school, whatever you're doing and tuned into us, we appreciate you being a part of the show. Hour number two is underway. If you missed any of the first hour, it was loaded, man. We talked about a bunch of stuff. College basketball, Auburn basketball, transfer portal stuff for Auburn football, NFL playoffs in there as well. I mean, just a loaded 60 minutes to kick off the week. And so if you missed any of that on the first hour of today's program, you can catch up with that on our station website at ESPNAU.com. You can also download the Radio Alabama app. You can listen to the show live on either one of those platforms on the Radio Alabama app. If you want to go back and listen to the podcast, you can do so by clicking ESPN 106.7, hit the podcast button at the bottom. It'll be right there. Or again, you can always go to the podcast center on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
And here in hour number two, we are starting off with a really fun national championship conversation. We'll talk a little bit about that game, some of the big-time storylines that are taking place in this game, maybe give a little hint towards our prediction for the national championship between Indiana and Miami. We'll also give some news updates on our high school coverage between Lee Scott Academy and Auburn High School and what that game and what those games, rather, looked like this past weekend, what is upcoming for both of these squads, now in the heart of area play on the varsity girls and varsity boys side of things. And then we'll get Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, get him on the phone lines as we do every single Monday at 3:30, get his thoughts from Auburn basketball, from junior day, a little bit of those recruiting side of things and the transfer portal, a really fun conversation that we will have with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. All of that coming up here in hour number two.
Yeah, national championship game coming up tonight. If you have thoughts or picks or predictions on what's going to happen down in Miami, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text with your score predictions in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And I'm excited for this game. I think this will be entertaining. I think it will be,
I hope,
clean. I don't think you'll see a bunch of turnovers, but I also don't know how much scoring you're going to see either. This will not be another Indiana route, but I don't believe that this will be the barn burner that Miami Ole Miss was either. I think it'll be somewhere in between. I think it'll be a game where both defenses play extremely well for most of the game. You're talking about two of the best defensive lines in college football. You're talking about two of the best defensive coordinators in college football. You're also talking about two of the most aggressive secondaries in college football who love to attack the football, get turnovers, and convert on those turnovers. And you're also talking about two offenses that could beat you in several ways. And so I believe, and last time I looked, Indiana, that spread continues to bounce around a little bit. Opened at 7.5, got up to 8.5. Last time I looked, it was back down to 7.5.
It is. That's where I see it right now. I even saw it at some places 9.5. So,
oh, wow.
Predicting Indiana by double digits, and that's a little bit scary. But that being said, I mean, that could easily be one of those Miami in desperation mode, realizing that they need to score offensively, and all of a sudden Indiana then responds and kind of kicks them away with a last-second touchdown or last-second field goal to make it a two-score game. Saw Tim Tebow had some quotes on this game and wanted to ask your thoughts on it because I think I agree with it. When I first heard it, I didn't. But the more that I dove into it, the more that I sat and thought about it, I think I do agree with a little bit more of his take of saying that there is a lot more pressure on Indiana than there is Miami. And he dove into, well, Miami's mindset has been, well, we weren't supposed to be here anyways, or at least that's what the mindset was outside of the locker room. Miami has already kind of experienced the pressure of this game, and you've played, again, you played in College Station and won a really ugly game. You played an Ohio State team and beat the favorite to win the national championship, and you did that dominating the clock, dominating the run game, and then you went and you showed the offense against an Ole Miss team that you felt like it was going to be whoever had the football last was going to win the game. So you've played three different types of football games in the college football playoff. Indiana could give you any one of those three, but you've already kind of been there and done that. The only pushback I have is the fact that Miami, you're now doing that in your home stadium, and you're doing it in front of fans that haven't seen a national championship in quite some time. But I think I do agree that there is a little bit more pressure on Indiana than there is on Miami.
I think I agree with that because of how Indiana has performed in the playoffs.
Sure, yeah.
And how they performed in the regular season.
And how Mendoza just hasn't made mistakes.
Correct.
To where you almost – it's kind of the inverse of what you've talked about or what we've talked about when it comes to Carson Beck on, okay, you've seen now three quality games.
Yeah.
When is that bad game coming? When is that two-interception, three-interception, throwing the ball downfield into triple coverage game coming? For Mendoza, it's the exact opposite. It's, okay – you've now seen more touchdowns than incompletions in the college football playoff.
The dude's damn near been perfect.
You have a Heisman Trophy now sitting in the back of your car, essentially, or sitting wherever you have it sitting. When is that frustrating game coming? When is the time that Miami locks down Surratt and Cooper and you have to go to your third or your fourth option, or Miami's rush defense doesn't allow Indiana to run the football and everything has to go on the shoulders of Mendoza? Because in the college football playoff, it hasn't. He hasn't thrown the ball more than 20 times once in the college football playoff.
Which
what
is
it going to look
nutty.
Like? Even against Ohio State, there weren't too many passing attempts.
He had an early pick, but so did Julian Sayin.
Right.
Neither one of them, I think, ended up in points or maybe a field goal or something. But
yeah, so what happens when Mendoza has to drop back and throw it 28, 30 times, if that is what the case is? And
so
many different ways that you can look at this game. My ultimate feeling just goes back to you are who you are at this point in the game, in the season. And I don't know. I mean, everything leads towards IU for me.
Which is why I agree that there is more pressure on Indiana. Again, if they had scratched and clawed their way here and dramatic win after dramatic win, and it was, wow, what a great story.
They're happy to be here,
exactly.
Like Miami is.
There's a different connotation to when Indiana got to the college football playoff as the number one team versus them now being in the national championship game as the number one team, because that's how it was, right? It was, oh, wow, this is so great. Indiana, what an awesome story.
It's so awesome. They went 12-0. Now get ready. Here's Ohio State.
Yeah, exactly. Here's Alabama. Here's Oregon or Texas Tech. Here's a championship game. Like nobody really thought Indiana would run all the way through, even after they beat Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. But now the mentality in the national championship game tonight is, this might be one of the greatest teams we've ever seen. This is one of the greatest turnarounds in sports we've ever seen.
And I know there's a couple people that have just heard that and scrunched their face or said, no way, but then you dive into some of the statistics and it's, oh, man.
And so because of how Indiana embarrassed Alabama in the Rose Bowl, smacked around Oregon again in the semifinals, and everybody and their brother is now picking the Hoosiers to win tonight, absolutely the pressure is on Indiana going up against a Miami team that most people said shouldn't have even been in the college football playoffs to begin with.
Exactly. I mean, that's the laughing stock that we've had halfway jokingly about the one thing the college football playoff will be able to hold over just about everybody's head for its entirety of, okay, well, you said that team shouldn't be in. Look where they're at right now. Going back to the Indiana's perspective, rather, if you have all of the pressure, why would you not want a coach like Kurt Cignetti, though, to be able to handle that pressure?
Yeah.
Somebody who does not look phased at all during any part of the 60 minutes.
And I don't think they're going to change the way they do anything.
No.
I really, really don't.
You see so many teams, sorry to cut you off, but in the college football playoff, national championship, or in the Super Bowl, of the first quarter being, okay, It's like two boxers that kind of dance around the ring, throw a couple of jabs, but really just feel each other out, make it to where, okay, in the second quarter, we now see what works. We're going to run the ball up the middle 10 times. We'll happily punt, play field position. You don't expect that from this Indiana team.
Indiana will put 21 on you in the first quarter if you let them.
Yeah.
They don't care. They were doing it against Old Dominion. They'll do it against Miami. They do not care.
Rather than Miami would be perfectly fine getting the football, going down, scoring a touchdown with 7 minutes left in the first quarter, forcing a three and out, all of a sudden making it 14-0 or it's 7-0 there in the red zone, and Mendoza stood on the sideline for 13 of the 15 minutes in the first quarter.
But what's so crazy, even about that situation, though, Christian, is let's say Miami does that. They go on an 8-minute drive, they score a touchdown, they're feeling good. I have so much confidence and Fernando Mendoza and this Indiana offense to walk out there and be like, that's cute, watch this.
Yeah.
And they go on a 4-play drive, bang, 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 and they score a touchdown. You look up at 7-7. And it's like, man, what the heck just happened? First quarter's over, it's tied. Miami feels like they've won, and the game's tied, or Indiana even has a 10-7 lead or something like that. I think Indiana has been battle-tested enough. I know they haven't played a close game since December in the Big Ten championship game, but I also don't want to fully buy in, even though I was one of the more outspoken people on Miami and not trusting them. I didn't have them picked to make it to the national championship game, and my goodness, if you had told me when they made the playoffs it was okay, you know they got to go to Texas A&M, they have to play Ohio State, and then they're going to get the hottest offense in the country at Ole Miss, back to back to back.
You would have said, ha, okay.
I would have said they wouldn't have made it past Texas A&M. I predicted them to lose.
As did?
To Texas A&M.
82% of America.
And then have to play Ohio State right after that? Come on. Nobody would have said that. But here they are. But what I'm not fully buying into like I did down the stretch of the regular season and into the college football playoffs was the Carson Beck blow up. Do I think he blows up tonight? No, I don't. Because I think he's playing probably the best football of his career. But I don't think he's perfect tonight. I don't think he's overly sharp tonight, because I think this is the best defense he has played all season long. All season. I think this will be the best defense he sees. It will be the best scheme that he sees, the best athletes he has seen, and just the most aggressive defense he has seen. I think Carson Beck throws one or two picks tonight. I think Indiana converts on those, maybe not on the actual turnover, but with their offense in response. And I think Indiana makes this a slow bleed. The score I've been on, Christian, is 31-17. I've been 31-17 Indiana pretty much through and through.
It's funny you say that. Mine was, I'm 33-20 Indiana.
Okay, yeah.
So right around that same.
Mm-hmm. I do think it's slow to start. I think both quarterbacks play fine. I think both defenses play extremely well. I think both teams try to run the football and have little to no success. But I think Indiana offensively is more committed to what they do, and they know it works. And they have more ways to beat you. I think Miami has one, maybe two receivers, right? We know Malachi Toney. They got the other kid that's their deep threat that I think Indiana is able to shut down. I think Miami has one good back that they rely on, who is, again, very talented, very good. But Indiana has three or four receivers they rely on. Indiana has two good running backs they rely on. Indiana has the better quarterback here. I think Indiana's defensive line is just as good as Miami. Maybe not as talented edge rushers, right, with guys like Kobe Dean. Those guys are ridiculous. But I think Indiana's secondary is better, even though Miami's has been one of the best with guys like Keontae Scott, right? They've been aggressive and things. But I don't know. I just compare what you're looking at. Plus, I want to make this clear, too. Miami's banged up. Miami's got several dudes not playing tonight, or guys that are playing tonight who are not 100%. Couple of corners. They do have a defensive back out for the first half because of the targeting call against Ole Miss late in that game, so remember that. They have a couple of dudes on the defensive side of the ball who are not 100% but are supposed to give it a go. Indiana's pretty healthy. As far as I read into it, Indiana is as healthy as they've been, and the guys who are not playing tonight haven't played all postseason long. I'm taking the healthier team. I'm taking the better team. I'm taking the better coach. You're telling me you're putting your house on Mario Cristobal to win a national championship? That story would be great in itself, right? Miami's at home. Cristobal returns, brings the U back to its glory days, right? And somewhere in the stands is one of his former teammates at Miami who's cheering on his son, Fernando Mendoza. Mario Cristobal and Fernando Mendoza's dad played college football together at the U. Fernando grew up a mile away from Miami's campus. The storylines are endless here. I just think Indiana's a better football team.
I went and looked at the college football opponent rushing yards per game. So basically your team's rush defense per game. Indiana's third, averaging 78 rushing yards per game. Miami is fifth at 85 or 86. So
I think Indiana's more committed to it, though, even if it doesn't work early.
I agree. But just saying third and fifth in the country in rush defense allowed yards per game.
Any yard you get will be – you'll cheer.
And
you'll be excited.
I say this smiling through the pain. Auburn finished eighth in the country in rush defense per game at 97.9 yards per game. Finished at eighth. You want to take a guess on where 1 through 7 ended up in the regular season?
In the college football playoffs?
All seven of them. Texas Tech, Oklahoma, Indiana, Georgia, Miami, James Madison, Ohio State. And Auburn was eighth.
Wow. That's brutal.
That's smiling through the pain.
Yeah, right, that's tough. That's tough. National championship game coming up tonight. We'll have the national radio broadcast for you right here on ESPN 106.7. Hoosiers and Canes, Indiana favorite around a touchdown, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. Do you have a pick? Indiana. Oh, you said 33-20.
Yeah.
That's a weird score.
It is a little bit of a weird score, a little bit of a weird game. I could see both of these teams playing rather conservative. You move down the field, kick a couple field goals, and I think the game might end up showing closer than that final score. But again, it's one of those Miami knows halfway through the fourth quarter that at the plus side of the 50-yard line, at the plus 45, it's 4th and 6. They know they have to get it. Otherwise, they're not going to get the football back. And Mendoza goes and leads that kind of game-solidifying drive. So, yeah, a little bit of a weird score, but it's the national championship. Why would you want a 28-21 type of game?
Yeah, that's right. I did read, and I think this is true. Somebody can confirm this if they want. Because this is being played at Hard Rock at Miami's home stadium.
Correct, yeah.
I'm fascinated to see what the fan split is here because Hoosier fans have traveled. They went to Atlanta. They're going to go to Miami. They're trying to win their first ever national championship. They're also trying to be the first ever 16-0 team in college football history. But the U is trying to revive itself, and they're in their home stadium, brother.
In their home stadium with the same mentality they've had the entire college football playoff.
We weren't supposed to be here. Let's go out and play with our hair on fire, basically.
And the other team favored and supposed to, quote-unquote, win
the
game.
So I'm fascinated to see what the fan turnout is. But what I read, and I think this is true, is they have Miami on the opposing sideline.
Correct.
They have them on the road sideline, road locker room, which is what I had said initially needed to happen. That's smart. That makes sense. That levels it out because this is not supposed to be a home game. And technically, it's not for Miami. It just happens to be in their home stadium.
Yeah.
They just happened to got to sleep in their own beds last night.
Well, what I was about to say countering that was I have also seen things that the coaching staff has kept them in the hotel.
Well, honestly, most teams actually do that before a home game anyway. But I know Auburn does that.
They're making it to where, we have complete control over you all week long.
Yeah. I mean, that's smart. And again, I've heard Auburn has done that for years where they'll stay in a hotel, in Opelika or Columbus or whatever, outside of Auburn just to kind of seclude yourself and kind of get locked in and stay out of trouble, things like that. So, but you're still in your hometown, even as stupid things as like, where the play clock is.
Sure.
You know where the clocks are. You know where to, you know what I mean? You know where to look. You know how to feel. You know the sidelines. Like, you those things do benefit Miami tonight, but that's not going to be enough for me. So, national championship game here tonight on ESPN 106.7. We'll take a break, come back, and continue talking. We'll give you some high school updates as well, and then we'll have Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network all coming up here on ESPN 106.7.
you are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
Couple of minutes before we get to our buddy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. He'll join us after our bottom of the hour break. And some high school updates in terms of high school basketball. Of course, Christian and I calling for local schools here. He does Lee Scott. I do Auburn High. I'm alive. I'm here.
It's a win in itself.
That's a win in itself.
And the equipment made it home, too.
Yeah, if you happen to tune in on Friday night, when I was on the air for
had that ready to go.
Yeah, people can go back and listen to it. You are more than welcome to go back and listen at 963WLEE.com, or you can find it on the Radio Alabama app. You can go back and listen to all of our high school games if you would like. Football, basketball, baseball, you can go back on the Radio Alabama app, click on the sports network you're looking for. Lee Scott or Auburn High, you can find those there or on Spotify. Just search the Lee Scott Sports Network or the Auburn High Sports Network. Don't want to shine too much light on exactly what happened, but I was calling the game at Auburn High Friday night against Opelika, and surrounded by hundreds of people, mostly students, a little scuffle broke out.
Is that the word we're going with?
Yeah, that's the cleanest way to say it. And your boy was right in the middle of it. I mean, right smack dab in the middle of it. And I did my best to keep calling the game until they finally paused it, realizing that there was a full-on brawl going on up top at Auburn High. So, yeah, I came out clean. Equipment was fine. Stayed on the air. Pretty good stuff. I even gave a couple score updates during the whole thing.
I mean, that's pretty solid.
I couldn't give play-by-play because it was behind me. So
you called me afterwards, and I was really hoping that it happened in front of you, and you could have Jose Ramirez, Tim Anderson.
I would
play-by-play.
Have, but no, I was more worried for
Anderson goes down.
I was kind of worried for my equipment and my life. So
have you seen? You've seen that video?
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah. It's incredible.
They're swinging. Anderson goes down. Anderson goes
he
down.
He dropped him too. Awesome. Yeah. But no. So yeah, that happened. But Auburn did win on Friday night. Auburn High took down Opelika. Varsity girls got a huge win by nearly 50. Varsity boys won by 17. And so varsity girls for Auburn High 3-0 in area play. Auburn High boys 2-1 in area play. Of course, six games are played in the area. So commanding lead for the Auburn High girls. Auburn High boys in the driver's seat. And they have a road game at Central coming up on Friday. So another chance to be back in action this Friday night on the Auburn High Sports Network.
Yeah, and for Lee Scott Academy, it was Lee Scott and the Gators. The Glenwood Gators made their way to Sanford Gymnasium, and Lee Scott, both the varsity girls and the varsity boys, made it three straight over the Gators. The Glenwood Gators came to what was a really, really fun environment and a really fun, I mean, it was packed out. It was standing room on either side of the gym, as I know you saw a couple of times when you were calling for Lee Scott, where it was underneath the rim.
Yeah.
Fans were getting out of the way for layups, things like that. The Lee Scott girls won 66-33, and the Lee Scott varsity boys. It was a 36-35 game at the halftime break, and we thought that this was going to be a full-out four-quarter war. The Lee Scott starting five were the first to come out of the locker room at halftime as the halftime buzzer sounded. There were no warm-up shots for Coach William Johnson's team. The starting five walked from the locker room straight onto the floor, and the bench followed, and my goodness, absolutely dominated the second half, winning that one 83-58 with JV boys winning. It was a full three-game sweep over the Gators. Starting tomorrow, Lee Scott will have three straight area games, Beulah, Dadeville, and then on the road at Glenwood. But Beulah comes to town here tomorrow afternoon. So Lee Scott Academy on the Lee Scott Sports Network on Tiger Country 104.5.
Yep, so great high school coverage going on here in the area. We'll take a break, come back, and Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network join us. We'll talk to him about transfer portal, college basketball, and I'm sure he's got a prediction for tonight. That's coming up next.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this MLK Day. And as we are working to get our man Jacob Hillman on the phone right now, we're going to talk to him, of course, about Auburn basketball, some Auburn football transfer portal news, other things happening around Auburn athletics. And I'm sure he's got a prediction for the national championship game coming up tonight as well. And a guy, and I don't know if you're off today or not, Jacob. You said you were good to hop on with us, so I didn't ask any further questions. But is today a golf day or was today a work day for you?
Well, regardless on if it was a work day or not, it's a little too cold even for myself to get out on the golf course. Yeah, playing golf in the same weekend that snow fell from the sky just doesn't sit right with me.
I'm surprised it wasn't. It's a work weekend. Yeah, I'm working on the 8-iron.
Well, I did that a little bit before the snow fell, but yeah, no, regardless, hey, look, we're in the thick of things here with the winter sports going on, so got to lock in on those.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, there's so much going on, and of course, we'll start with Auburn basketball, who returned home on Saturday to Neville Arena. They had South Carolina come to town, and I think the general consensus, Hillman, is Auburn wins the game, which is nice, but it wasn't the clean, overwhelming victory that Auburn fans were hoping for against a lesser opponent in South Carolina. Your thoughts on what happened Saturday evening inside of Neville Arena?
Yeah, just it was a must-win game for Auburn, and this team is, at this point in the season, especially with what's on the horizon, a tough 7-game stretch starting tomorrow against Ole Miss on the road. And then you got 5 of 6 games after that that are quad one games. And Texas, who knows, could climb into that as well when they come to Neville Arena the following Tuesday. But you're right. It was a game that was odd because Auburn was cold from the field shooting the ball. Keyshawn Hall got into foul trouble early and only played, 14 minutes or however long it was. He scored 8 points. Half of those came in the final minute on free throws. And then It was Filip Jovic dominating with his season high in points, 23. And he was really dominant, quite frankly, against South Carolina, really imposing himself. And Coach Pearl talked about it after the game on the Regent Bank postgame show, how it was up to the coaching staff to look at Filip and tell him, listen, stop looking to pass the ball. And he had 0 assists in this game. And it showed because they told him to go score. And he went out and did that with those 23 points. And even the rest of the front court, Sebastian Williams-Adams and Keyshawn Murphy had a great day as well. And I think it showed that this team does have the ability to adjust on the fly. If say Keyshawn Hall is in foul trouble and Todd Pettiford and Kevin Overton, they weren't making threes like we're used to, both 1 for 5 from 3-point range at Neville Arena. That's not what you wanted from this team, but Filip Jovic, Sway, and Keyshawn were able to make up for it in on the interior.
I want to look at this season as it's something that we've talked a lot about, but on the football perspective per se, on a first-year head coach and limiting these expectations that you have, it's even more difficult to do following a Final Four run on the hardwood. But how much of a win like this is just something that, man, you have to pause after any sort of statements because it's simply the fact that Auburn won a basketball game on Saturday in the SEC, a night where only 2 home teams found wins in the SEC, where after all things are said and done, although it's maybe not a win that you'll look at come March, but it's still a nice win, something that you can build off of, and you know Stephen Pearl is going to do so.
Yeah, and that's the thing is when you look at it from, I guess, a macro perspective of how is this team going to make the NCAA tournament? Right now, I think Auburn would be in the tournament if the season ended today because of its difficult non-conference schedule. It's 2-6 in quad one wins. NC State just fell out of quad one because it lost to Georgia Tech at home. So you're going to have to find some quality wins down the road at some point to really solidify yourself in the field. And that's really to your point about the expectations and what you want out of this team going forward. That's obviously when you have a full roster reset, you have a brand new head coach, that those are the kinds of things that obviously make it difficult to know what to expect. And that was the case with this team. And I think that, like I was saying, going forward, you're about to have plenty of opportunities, whether it's on the road tomorrow night against Ole Miss or when you go visit the defending national champions on Saturday in Florida, who is looking like the best team in the SEC after a loss to open its conference season. And that those are opportunities to build on this resume and continue to show, okay, yeah, you played the tough non-conference schedule, but are the results there? And that's what needs to come next. And like I said, plenty of opportunities over the next month or so where you're going to Florida, you're going to Tennessee, you're hosting Alabama and Vanderbilt. Those are the kinds of games that you don't have to win them all, obviously, because you're not going to win them all. But if you can find a couple of wins in that stretch, then you're feeling pretty good about this team's chances in the postseason and getting to the postseason.
We're on the phone lines right now with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here on ESPN 106.7, mentioning guys like Sway and Jovic who really have started to blossom at the beginning of SEC play. This is more of an opinion hypothetical question here, Jacob, but how good or maybe what is Auburn's ceiling if those guys, along with Elijah Freeman and those players, start to play at that level every single night, on top of getting Keyshawn Hall and Tahad Pettifer back to what we know they can do, Kevin Overton being consistent? I mean, what do you think the ceiling can be for this Auburn team if everything starts to come together through the heart of conference play?
Well, I just think you have to look at the home game prior to that. Obviously, but between the Arkansas win and South Carolina win, you lose to Missouri, but you have that 22-point win over a ranked Arkansas team, an Arkansas team that's very talented, a team that is going to be in the NCAA tournament, going to contend for the SEC. And I think that is this team's ceiling, where it can be some of the most talented teams in the SEC. Obviously, this year's SEC is not as top-loaded as it was last year. Obviously, Auburn and Florida were those two teams at the very top a year ago. But now I think it's a lot more jumbled up, where you couldn't even tell me who will be, you know, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth, or seventh in the SEC. I feel pretty comfortable saying Florida and Vanderbilt are the top dogs right now in the SEC, but they're not as good as Auburn and Florida were a year ago. So I think when you really look at it, it's the middle of the pack that's going to be a lot of figuring out to do over the next month. And that's an opportunity, even though Auburn has a 2-3 conference record and it's kind of back there right now. You find a couple of wins that some folks aren't expecting over the next few weeks, that you're right there in the thick of things, trying to climb your way in the SEC standings and hopefully even maybe contend for a top four spot if you get really hot. But just getting into the top seven or so of the SEC is going to set you up nicely for Selection Sunday when March rolls around.
We got our guy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. And Hillman, I know that you, as well as all of the Auburn fans listening, and me and Jacob both, are all taking a little bit of a sigh of relief now that the college football transfer portal has closed, right? You can still get a couple more additions, but no new names are going to enter the transfer portal, so you can actually now go and look at the roster and start remembering or looking at some of the names that are going to be playing inside Jordan Hare in 2026. Now that this is mostly done, Auburn's going to still get a couple of more transfer portal additions, you would imagine, but 33 incoming transfers for the Auburn Tigers in 2026. Your overall thoughts of what Alex Golish, head coach, and the rest of the staff for Auburn have done so far?
Yeah, really, I think a successful job so far, just with so much ingress and egress of this roster. There's a lot to figure out, and I think this coaching staff did a really substantial job at figuring out what the biggest needs were and really attacking, whether it was by quantity or quality of where those needs were, like the trenches, offensive and defensive line. You saw late Auburn make a run at several of those guys in the trenches, as well as the defensive backfield. I mean, Auburn signed three or four quarterbacks over the last few days, and That's a huge deal for DJ Durkin to come back, and he already has his core of defensive guys like Xavier Atkins that are returning. But then you have those additions that are going to help this defense take the next step. And then obviously on the offense, Coach Golish and Coach Gordon taking over, it's going to be a big learning process. But fortunately, there's also the aspect of those South Florida guys that are coming in that are familiar with the system and know what the expectations are from Coach Golish and so on. So I like what has been built so far, and I think that there's still more to come, but right now the core of the transfer portal is exactly what Auburn fans were wanting and expecting, and hopefully we get to see a lot of it in spring ball, and then that'll culminate in the 8A game on April 18th.
Hillman, before we get to your prediction for the national championship game tonight, I do want to go back to the hardwood for a second, but go to the professional side, where I'm sure you've seen Dylan Cardwell start to really make a name from himself out in Sacramento. Seems like they're loving the energy that he brought when he was on the Plains, and he's getting the fans hyped up. Nobody really does that anymore in the NBA, but Dylan really starting to find his space there, and seems like they're loving him, some Dylan Cardwell out there in Sacramento.
They absolutely are, and it's not a shock to anyone who's followed Auburn basketball over the last 5 or so years, and he's not the only one having success in the NBA. Jabari Smith scored 30 points last night, a career high, 7 threes. But, I mean, you go back to Cardwell's kind of his impact. I saw something. It was a Sacramento State player, obviously. He probably watches a lot of the Sacramento Kings, but he was talking about at one of their games. He was bringing the energy, and when he was asked about after the game, he said he went to the Kings game and saw Dylan Cardwell doing it, so he wanted to bring the same energy. And that's a heck of an impact by a guy who's on a two-way deal right now. He's trying to earn his way onto a full roster spot with Sacramento, and I think with the trade deadline coming up and things starting to get into the thick of things for the playoff run, and the Kings aren't quite in the playoff run, but I have a feeling that he's going to start to get his full roster spot at some point over the next few months.
Yeah, it's cool to see Auburn have guys in the league and continuing to make an impact there in the NBA. But, coming up tonight, national championship game, my friend. We'll have the radio broadcast, the national radio broadcast, here on ESPN 106.7. Indiana and Miami, the Hoosiers and the Hurricanes. Your thoughts and your picks for the Natty tonight, Mr. Hillman?
Yeah, I think that this, obviously, two different stories, but both kind of not what you would expect. I don't think many folks before the season had Indiana and Miami in the national title game at this point, especially in this way, where Miami's the 10 seed making the run, and Indiana's the team with the first chance to go 16-0 in the modern era of college football. But I think ultimately Indiana gets it done. I really wouldn't be shocked if this game kind of gets out of hand in Indiana's favor. I think that the Hoosiers are just the better coach team, and while Miami might have a little bit more talent, the defense is strong, and that's where I think Miami can stay in the game, is that defense will probably give Fernando Mendoza some fits at times tonight. I think that Indiana ultimately comes out on top and likely does it by multiple scores.
We'll see what happens. Again, Indiana-Miami here on ESPN 106.7 tonight. But lots happening around Auburn athletics, especially this week here on the Plains. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network with us. Plug it all, my friend. Tell the people what's going on with the Sports Network coverage and then everything else going on here in Auburn the next couple of days.
Yeah, I'll start off with Auburn women's basketball, because they're on a two-game winning streak in SEC play and getting a win over ranked Alabama. Coach Larry Vickers, he talked about how when he got the job here, the Watt of Honor, Auburn women's basketball legend, called him and said, no matter what happens, the biggest thing is you need to beat Alabama. And Coach Vickers said he was glad he was able to check that off the list. And they did that on Thursday. And now moving on, no game yesterday. So a little bit of time off to breathe and enjoy that before they go on the road to play Vanderbilt, which is a top 5 team in the country, just beat Michigan earlier today, who's top 10 in the country. That game will take place on Thursday right here on ESPN 106.7, beginning at 6:30 with airtime at 6:15. And they'll be back home on Sunday to host Oklahoma at 1. And then tomorrow, men's basketball visits Ole Miss at 8 o'clock on Wings 94.3 FM on the air at 7:30. Andy Burcham, Coach Randall Dickey, and Brad Law on the call. Also on Thursday, we'll have Tiger Talk. It won't be on location at Baumhauer's Victory Grill. We'll be in studio with Stephen Pearl, Larry Vickers, men's tennis coach Bobby Reynolds, and gymnastics coach Jeff Grabe join us at 6 o'clock, kind of leading into that women's basketball broadcast on Thursday. And then Friday, gymnastics host No. 1 Florida at 7:45 at Neville Arena. There's a limited number of tickets left, so if you want to go see a top 10 gymnastics matchup, go get your tickets right now at aubtick.com. And then men's and women's tennis are both in action as well. This weekend, the women are hosting the ITA kickoff right there at the Yarborough Tennis Center. That's free to attend, so make sure you go take in a top 5 women's team in the tennis rink at the Arbor Road Tennis Center.
All sorts of things going on that you can be a part of, and the Auburn Sports Network covers it better than anybody. Jacob Hillman with us on the phone lines. We appreciate you, my friend. Another week is here. Get after it. We'll talk to you again next Monday, okay?
Absolutely. We'll talk to you then. War Eagle, guys.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, again, with us every Monday, 3:30, right here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We'll take a break, come back, and wrap up the Monday edition of the show.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We appreciate you being with us today. It's been a fun show getting back in action on this Monday afternoon on MLK Day. All shows are on today. Everything back to normal. And we appreciate you being with us. And if you have missed any of the show, you can go back and catch up with our conversations on college basketball, Auburn basketball, transfer portal news for Auburn football, national championship conversation and predictions in the show, and then our conversation with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. So all of that on today's show. If you missed it, check it out on our station website or on the Radio Alabama app and the podcast center, ESPNAU.com. Breaking news at the end of today's show. It's a sad day in the NBA. First time in 21 years, LeBron James was not named an All-Star starter.
Honestly, like he hasn't been that good. He said jokingly.
I know. If there's something I just don't care about anymore, it's All-Star games in any of the sports.
The recognition is one thing, but, yeah, the game itself.
The event, it's like, come on, this is sad. There is some Auburn breaking news, though, which we can discuss momentarily and more so on tomorrow's show. Auburn picked up its first high school recruit, high school commit of the 2027 class. Alex Golish and company have picked up a three-star tight end, Tank Proctor, has committed to play for the Auburn Tigers. A guy who was very, very popular in the recruiting rankings, very popular on the recruiting trail. Their first high school commitment of the 2027 class. Again, the tight end 2027, Tank Proctor, 6'5", 213 pounds. He held offers. Oh, goodness, where'd my list go? I just saw it. It disappeared from me. He had offers from other big P4 schools, other SEC schools as well. He plays down in the state of Florida. I think he had offers from Florida and other places. X just auto refreshes on my computer and everything just disappears. So,
that's about right.
But yeah, I mean, a guy that, again, has committed to Auburn. Trey is technically his name, Trey Proctor. Again, 6'4 and a half, 213 pounds. Yeah, offers from Florida State, Florida, Miami, Auburn, and he chose the Tigers. So Auburn has its first commit in the 2027 class.
Yeah, says that he loves everything that Golish is about, especially on the offensive side of the football. As a junior, caught 30 passes for 604 yards and 11 touchdowns. And most recently was in the Navy All-American Bowl Combine and was named the Alpha Dog of the Combine. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Love that.
Again, one of those guys that you will never complain about.
No, absolutely not. Auburn stacking a tight end room? What? What does that even mean?
Even is that position?
Yeah, couldn't tell you. So, yes, we will have more on that tomorrow. What is tomorrow? Tomorrow's Tuesday. We'll recap the national championship game tomorrow, which, again, national radio broadcast here on ESPN 106.7. As soon as the drive is over, you'll be able to tune in for that, so be sure you do. We'll have recap of that tomorrow. More college basketball tomorrow as more games get on the hardwood tomorrow and Wednesday. More portal news, because I'm sure there will be something, and a whole lot more. So be sure that you come back 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Again, for those who didn't hear, we both have the Hoosiers tonight, huh? I don't think I've met a single person that has picked Miami so far.
At least not one that does it publicly.
Yeah, I have not met a single person that says Miami, easily. Maybe that's a sign. Maybe Indiana falls flat on their face.
Nobody said Miami easily in the first three games either.
Yeah,
other than
right.
Maybe against the Ole Miss, but definitely maybe. Not the first two.
No, for sure. So, again, Natty, tonight we'll talk about it tomorrow and a whole lot more. 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.